Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. At the corner of Spring Street and Broadway in the heart of Soho in Lower Manhattan, this is an area where you used to be able to get really cheap clothing, cheap food, and a cheap place to live. Lots of musicians and artists lived in Soho. Now it's completely different. There are still clothing stores, but they're high-end fashion boutiques from several continents, and the musicians have largely gone. So have many of the places where they used to record, and one more of them is about to close. The Magic Shop opened on Crosby Street, just a block away, in 1988, and over the years it was a musical home to artists as varied as the blues pianist Charles Brown,
when I look at my baby's picture,
the Ramones, Norah Jones, Coldplay, and David Bowie, who recorded his final two albums at the Magic Shop.
Something happened on the day he died. Spirit rose a meter and stepped aside.
The studio's been kind of hiding in plain sight here on Crosby Street in Soho, just one block east of Broadway. For all these years, there's no sign out front that says it's here. But that hasn't stopped all those musicians and many more from beating a path to Steve Rosenthal's door. Steve is the founder and owner of the Magic Shop, and just a couple of weeks before the final session, and perhaps a month out from the date on which he needs to vacate the premises, he agrees to take us on a tour of this historic studio.
So, hi.
Hi, Steve.
Welcome
to the studio.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
So this is the entrance, the lobby to the Magic Shop. Basically, there are two different things that go on at the Magic Shop. Upstairs here, where you are right now, is where we make the new records. So, for example, we have a wall here filled with lots of the records that have gotten made. So this is where David Bowie made his last two records, Black Star and the Next Day, Coldplay, the Ramones, Kurt Vile, Lou Reed, Natalie Merchant, Suzanne Vega, Shooter Jennings, Norah Jones made a couple of records here, She and Him. You know, it's been quite an amazing 28 years. So up here is where people make the new records. And then downstairs, where I'll take you later, is where my staff and I work on restoring and releasing, old masters and vintage recordings. So for the last, about 18 or so years, there's been a lot of this dual thing going on.
At this point, I noticed the soundtrack of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the Grammy Award-winning CD produced by T-Bone Burnett, on that wall. Now, was Oh Brother done here?
Yeah, well, I did all the... T-Bone's been here a few times, but I did all of the Lomax recordings. I was in charge of digitizing the Lomax library. So I did about 130 Lomax CDs, and when T-Bone was here once, I gave him a box full of Lomax stuff. This was before Oh Brother. So I gave him the prison recordings. I gave him a bunch of stuff that ended up being on Oh Brother, so they gave me a platinum record. And
so the chain gang that opens up Oh Brother, T-Bone
right.
Got that from you?
Yes. This, by the way, is a real dinosaur. You know, I do lots of tape and audio restoration projects, and I need all the different formats. This is a Sony 3348 tape machine, which I believe was about $250,000 when it was first made. Now you can get them on eBay for about $300.
And what's the format? Half inch?
Yeah, this is half inch 48 track digital. So sometimes the digital stuff really devalues pretty seriously. This is a Mellotron, which you know your listeners might know from like the beginning of Strawberry Fields.
Mm-hmm.
you know,
or any Moody Blues song,
right? Or any one of amazing of the whole question of a balance, or to our children's 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 children.
Now, is this a vintage Mellotron?
Yeah, this is an original Mellotron.
Wow,
yeah, and it works. I have tapes. I have 6 different tapes, and yeah, the Tron works. It's fine. So, come on down in here. We'll go into the control room. There is a band working. So, there is a band working. This is Matt Boynton. He is one of the engineers and producers that work here at the Magic Shop. You want to just tell a little bit about the band that's here now?
The band is called Babylon Tom. And they are out there recording right now.
Right. And where are they from?
Here, New York.
Okay.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn. And was this their third day, or how many days have they been here?
Third day, yeah.
So who wants to talk about your band a little bit?
That's Brian. He's our singer-songwriter.
Hey, Brian. So you're one of the final denizens of the Magic Shop.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Why'd you pick this place?
Well, there are lots of records we really loved. So, for example, The Suburbs by Arcade Fire. Sometimes I can't believe it. I'm moving past the feeling. We found out they did it here, and we just called them up, and they seemed like really great people, knew what they were doing. So,
yeah. Yep. So there's something in the sound of that record that you hope to recapture here by using the same equipment, same studio.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
And does that sort of thing, I mean, I should ask Steve this question.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I think it's something that happens a lot, because really the place that you record your record in really does impact what your record ends up sounding like. It's a question of the geometry of the space that you're recording in and the gear that you have. Sometimes you have to get sort of geeky. You need to bring the same amps. You know, you need, in some cases, to get very specific in order to recreate stuff. But, yeah, I think there's no question that where you do your record has an impact on what the record sounds like.
So you can tell an Abbey Road record from a Hit Factory record.
Oh, can I tell? Yeah, but I'm like a studio geek. I've been doing this for 40 years. So, yeah, I mean, especially with Abbey Road records, there's a certain sort of thing that happens to the bottom end. And I can tell a power station record. I can take, drums that are recorded in the power station pretty quickly. And I can tell clearly, drums that have been recorded here at the Magic Shop pretty quickly.
So how's it going so far?
All the pressure of closing out the Magic Shop, there's such a drama and a beauty to that, that we have sort of only been able to succeed by actively ignoring that pressure and just pretending we're at home or whatever. You know,
that's how I got here this morning, with the same attitude.
Right.
Because if I really thought about the fact that I was going to close in 30 days and couldn't get here anymore or come here anymore, I'd really be in bad shape. So I'm sort of doing it the same way you are. I'm just sort of plowing through, coming down, chatting with people, dealing with trying to clean my office, and just kind of dealing with it in half hour blocks.
That's so great, because the more I have in common with Steve, the cooler I feel. So.
So at this point, I'm wondering how the whole reverse engineering thing is going on. They want to recapture the sound of Arcade Fire's The Suburbs. They're using the same studio, the same equipment. Singer Brian Ballard offers us this example of the band Babylon Tom. It's a rough mix of what they've been doing here at the Magic Shop. Just a rough mix. Babylon Tom intend to add lots of other instruments over the top, but that's what they've done so far at the Magic Shop, using, as I say, the same board, the same equipment, the same studio in which Arcade Fire did their album The Suburbs, which raises an obvious question as you stand in the control room surrounded by this massive piece of equipment.
So what is this, the board that you have here?
Okay, so this console is a BBC style 80s series Neve console. with flying faders. Originally, the console was commissioned for the BBC, made of Vail Studios in 1970. I bought it in 1987. I went on an Neve hunt to England because I was really in love with the sound of these vintage Neves. So I went to England in 1987 and I found the first 32 input console. And then subsequently in 1996, I got the other half of the console, and Nat Priest and Rupert Neve helped me put the two consoles together. So this is Neve number 289 and this is Neve number 290.
And this is, these are analog Neve boards.
Yeah, these are analog consoles, all handmade. They're what's called Class A recording consoles. You know, I equate like owning the console to sort of like having an old Thunderbird, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing ride, but you have to keep working on it.
And as with the old Thunderbird, I guess finding parts can be a challenge.
Completely. I mean, the parts that are missing we like to call unobtainium. And there's lots of unobtainium in this console. You can see sort of black buttons sort of popping in where the white ones are. I think all in all, it's in pretty amazing shape. And, Blondie was just here last week making their new record. So we've, been really staying busy, even though I'm sort of forced to close. We're still sort of staying busy here.
So you're keeping this board?
No, I can't keep the board.
What will happen to it?
Somebody who's very wealthy will buy it. My wife and I owned a club in Brooklyn,
the living room,
right? Yeah. Which we had to close in December, and in order to build the club in Brooklyn, I basically leveraged all my gear. So when the club closed, I basically lost my gear, and I'm going to pay back the people that loaned us the money. So,
Steve Rosenthal co-owned the living room with his wife, Jennifer Gilson, closing that space in December, and now the Magic Shop in March has been a double blow. The living room was important. It was the site of a musical community that spawned a lot of singer-songwriters, Ron Sexsmith, for example, Jesse Harris, and of course, Nora Jones.
Come away where they can't tempt us with their lies. And I want to walk with you.
Back to the Magic Shop, the recording studio whose final session is March 16th. Steve Rosenthal needs to have everything out of the space by the end of March. And it's a tall order because there is equipment and other stuff everywhere.
There's a tape machine that we use all the time. It's an Ampex APR machine from the 1970s. We do lots of tape transfers on that machine. All the Errol Garner work that I did for Concert by the Sea, we used that tape machine. This little office here, which is kind of filled with stuff because, we're trying to clean up stuff. This was the little office that David Bowie used. Sort of, it was his private room there.
Mm-hmm.
When he came. As I said, there are kind of two things that go on here. And downstairs is where we do all of our audio restoration and preservation work, which has really been a big part of what's gone on here at the Magic Shop for the last number of years. This is a sort of separate shelf showing a number of the projects that we've been working on lately. This is the Bottom Line archive that I'm working on. I've been working with Alan Pepper and Greg Bendian on transferring, digitizing, and then releasing small part of his amazing archive. So this is one of the preservation rooms, and what we do down here is digitize and restore old recordings. So how can I explain this? I'll talk a little bit about the Errol Garner archive,
right,
for example.
The Concert by the Sea.
So, for example, with the complete Concert by the Sea, this was part of the digitization process of the entire Errol Garner archive. I worked with Jocelyn Arum, who's in my lounge right now, and Jerry Allen, the amazing jazz pianist, on producing the complete Concert by the Sea.
Jazz pianist Errol Garner's Concert by the Sea was recorded in 1958 at Carmel by the Sea, a kind of precursor to the Monterey Jazz Festival. The Concert by the Sea sold 1 million copies.
really crazy story, but literally we found the other half in a storage space on 24th and 12th Avenue. The family had put Errol's tapes and memorabilia and photos into storage, and then Jocelyn put together a team to go through all of the storage facilities to find stuff. And what we started finding was like writings and letters about Concert by the Sea Volume 2. So we were like, Volume 2? Well, yeah, right. What the heck does that mean? So we spent a lot of time researching. I went up to the Sony library, and eventually we found a whole series of tapes that turned out to be the complete Concert by the Sea, which instead of being 11 songs was 22 songs. So we're delighted to be able to offer, you know, all of Errol's fans, you know, the ability to finally hear the concert the way it had happened.
And so that digitization process, that involves bringing what are probably old tapes. Some of them need to be baked. Some, I mean, literally in an oven.
Yeah, I'll take you down the hall and show you the ovens, and you're 100% right. Especially things made in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. So we have a process by which we do an assessment of the tape, and then if it needs to be baked, we take it to the back, and I'll show you where our tape baking ovens are. Be careful.
Yep.
There's crap all over the place. So this is the storage place, and this is all also where we're baking tapes. We use confection oven dehydrators at very low temperatures to sort of readhere the oxides to the black black backing on reels of tape. Here. You want to hold this? I'll see if there's one in there. So that's a reel of 2-inch tape from the 70s that we're baking right now. The large reels like this might have to be baked for a day or two. And what will happen is we'll take it out of the oven, we'll look at it. If it feels right, we'll take it to the tape machine, we'll play like the first 20 seconds or so to make sure nothing sheds. And if nothing sheds, then we'll go ahead and do the transfer. So there's more reels down here. I've really been encouraging, and maybe I can do this on your show as well, any of the artists that have come to the Magic Shop over the years and you think you might have some of your tapes here, you really need to come and get them now.
Like, who have you found?
Oh, my goodness. There's tons of Ron Sexsmith tapes. Suzanne Vega's going to come and get her tapes. Sonic Youth just got their tapes. Marianne Faithfull had tapes. There's just tons of people whose tapes were left here. So we've been reaching out to people, trying to get them to come and get their tapes, and lots of people have, but I still have tapes here, and I only have about a month to go. So I really encourage you to get your butt over here and get your tapes.
All right. A word to the wise.
And then this is the lounge.
And is that a theremin over there in the corner?
There's a theremin. It's kind of wounded, but it gets used from time to time, the exercise chair. And then up here is sort of memorabilia that people have been leaving over the years. Champagne from David Bowie's birthday party. And then the last thing, I guess, is just sort of photos of me when I was younger.
And at this point in our tour of the Magic Shop, we head back into the live room, as Steve Rosenthal calls it, the studio where most of the recordings are made. Now, you were talking about the geometry of the room, and, you know, when I walk into a studio, having had a hand in designing our performance room, the first thing I look at is where the walls meet the ceiling.
Right.
Are they right angles?
No, of course not. In fact, you can see, if we stood on the drum riser in the back, that all the walls and angles are splayed. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it's a rectangle, but it's not. The wall is dropping over the course of the studio, and the walls are splayed at the opposite angles, because you don't really want any standing waves. So I have to say this, though. there are clearly rules in building a recording studio, right? And there are things that you can do really wrong. So those you have to avoid. And, you know, talking to anybody who's going to build one of these crazy joints. But I have to say, there's a certain amount of mystery to whether rooms really work or not. Mm-hmm. And I am not going to pretend like I know the answer to that part of the equation.
Is that why it's called The Magic Shop?
Well, it's actually called The Magic Shop. My first wife, my ex-wife, Fran, named the studio. I wanted to call the place, well, I wanted to have something about the relationship between magic and music. I was a Spoonful freak, so I loved the idea of Do You Believe in Magic and the whole thing. So I wanted to have sort of a combination, you know, the idea of magic and music. So I said, why don't we call it Sleight of Hand? And she said that seemed a little criminal. So I said, what do you think? She said, well, why don't you just call it like The Magic Shop, like the Hit Factory or the Power Station, right, or something like that.
And it's best not to wait for luck to save you. Pass through the fire to the light. Pass through the fire to the light. Pass through the fire to the light. It's best not to wait for luck to save you. Pass through the fire to the light.
So this is the recording room that we're in here right now. There are lots of vintage tube microphones. These are Neumann microphones from the 1960s. There's tube microphones from the 1950s here. Here's the interesting thing. This is a movable wall, right, which can separate the back part of the studio from the back third from the front.
So you can isolate
two-thirds.
Drums and...
Exactly. So everybody has a different idea about where they want to put the drums in the room. So you can come back here and see these two ISO booths that I built. Although lots of times there are people who sing here in the ISO booths.
Yeah. For example, Bowie might have been in an isolation.
Yeah. Here's the way they set it up when David was here. He actually had this area on the other side of the wall in front of the ISO booths. And that record was... like lots of great records that were made here at the Magic Shop, was basically played. You know, the band was in here. He was singing his references. He's singing his references. And then he sang and they played. And the Magic Shop has always been about sort of the interaction between musicians, mm-hmm, and the interaction between musicians and the artists. And most of the records over the years that have gotten done here have really gotten done in that sort of way, where the artist sings and the musicians are in the room. And it's that sort of interaction between music and time and art and intention, right, that really creates great records.
Yeah.
I can't give everything.
And you mentioned being a big Beatles fan. I mean, the more I've read about the Beatles and the way they started making records, you know, piecemeal, you know, it makes me think maybe they could have found a way to stay together if they just found a way to play together. Anymore.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I think, you know, you can tell, at least I can tell the records they get made piece by piece. There's a certain disconnect that you get or that I can sort of hear. And, you know, I learned a lot and got to meet Alan Lomax. And after I met Alan and worked on his archive, it completely transformed the way I think about music and the documenting of music and the recording of music. And even though I own a recording studio where you're supposed to be able to deconstruct stuff and do things bit by bit, like the Lomaxian sort of thing about documenting a moment really had a big impact on me. So I think that's why I've always enjoyed the records where they... you know, you can feel the interaction.
I can't
You mentioned that Blondie has been recording their next record here.
Yes.
Deborah Harry had a great... We were doing a show about New York in the 70s, and she had a great line, which I will never forget. She said, back in the 70s in New York, real estate was garbage, and garbage was everywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's classic.
So, I mean, as the Magic Shop closes, what happens next?
Well, yeah. So what happens next is I'm going to continue my restoration and archive and preservation work, but I'm not going to try to go build the Magic Shop again. Seems kind of silly to me.
So you won't be using the name the Magic Shop for the restoration?
Yeah, I might, but I mean, the idea of building another full service recording studio where bands come and make records, I don't know, seems a little silly to me.
And in terms of the living room, which moved from Manhattan to Brooklyn?
Well, the living room, we closed the living room at the end of December. Jennifer and I built basically like a living room venue. It was big enough for almost 300 people, but we really did. There was enormous rent pressure. And, yeah, I mean, the two of us are kind of shell-shocked at this point, to be honest about it. And for me, you know, going public with the sort of the news about having to close the studio has sort of really kind of been a kick in the head. What kind of city are we building? What kind of city do we want to live in here? What are the things that we value? These are the questions that need to be asked by New Yorkers, not just how many square feet is this and what's my square foot price. Right? We need to start asking different questions here in New York.
Well, Steve, you've done yeoman's work here for many, many years, and I'm sure you will find a way to continue to make a contribution. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
It's my pleasure. It's really great to meet you in person. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you. Steve Rosenthal, founder and owner of The Magic Shop, which wraps up shop this month.
Where are we now? Where are we now?
I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast.
The moment you